Meta Practice V1, Chapter 7. The Discipline of Return. Chapter 7. The Discipline of Return. If wholeness depended on never getting pulled into fear, vanity, resentment, performance, numbness, or self-protection, almost no one would qualify. Human beings drift. We contract. We get activated. We get tired. We get hooked by old patterns. We confuse speed for clarity, intensity for truth, and self-defense for wisdom. Even if we genuinely want to live through one lens, we will not hold it perfectly. This matters because many philosophies fail at the exact point where real life begins. They describe an ideal state and quietly imply that the problem is your inability to remain there. But the philosophy of one lens does not require perfection. It requires return. That word is central. Not achievement. Not permanent purity. Not spiritual invulnerability. Return. A whole life is not built by never leaving the right orientation. It is built by noticing when you have left it and coming back, before drifting becomes your default state. Why return matters more than purity. People often imagine moral and spiritual maturity as a kind of uninterrupted condition. The calm person stays calm. The loving person stays loving. The wise person stays clear. This fantasy is understandable. It promises relief from inner inconsistency. It also flatters the ego's desire for arrival. We want to become the sort of person who no longer has to struggle with the older forces. We want a stable identity called whole. Real maturity is usually less glamorous. It looks more like shortened recovery time. Less time spent inside resentment. Less time rationalizing unloving behavior. Less time worshipping moods as truth. Less time building entire days around one contracted moment. The point is not that you never drift. The point is that drift stops becoming destiny. A divided life is not just a life in which bad states occur. It is a life in which those states remain unquestioned long enough to organize behavior, speech, perception, and identity. A person gets angry, and instead of returning, they start narrating a world in which contempt makes sense. They feel threatened, and instead of returning, they build a whole strategy around control. They feel ashamed, and instead of returning, they become performative, evasive, or harsh. One lens offers a different practice. It says, "Yes, you drifted. Now come back. Not because you are evil. Not because you failed some purity test. Because life gets distorted quickly when smaller lenses stay in charge. The smaller lenses pulling you away. Return only becomes a real discipline once you know what you are returning from. Most people do not simply fall out of love. They fall into narrower governing lenses. The most common are familiar from Chapter 2, status, comparison, self-protection, image, resentment, extraction, domination, withdrawal. Each of them solves something real in the short term. Each of them narrows the field of care when it stays in charge. The discipline of return begins with recognizing the shift. I am no longer seeing through the widest and most coherent lens available. I have narrowed. Something smaller is currently driving. That moment of recognition is already a form of freedom. Return is an action, not a mood. Many people wait to return until they feel loving again. That can take a long time. Meanwhile, the smaller lens keeps shaping the field. The conversation gets harsher. The silence gets longer. The internal story gets more self-justifying. Return has to become more practical than waiting for warm feelings. It is not primarily the recovery of a beautiful emotion. It is a disciplined reorientation of attention and action. To return means remembering what lens you actually want to live by, interrupting the smaller lens before it hardens further, re-including self, other, and whole in the frame, choosing the next truthful act from that wider orientation. Sometimes the feeling follows. Sometimes it doesn't, at least not immediately. That is fine. Love does not become unreal just because it is not emotionally easy in the moment. There are days when return feels spacious and sincere. There are other days when return feels more like restraint. You do not send the cruel message. You do not nurse the fantasy of humiliation. You do not make the manipulative offer. You do not perform innocence while hiding from truth. That, too, is return. The micromoments where life turns. People often imagine transformation in dramatic terms. A retreat. A breakthrough. A new relationship. A grand act of forgiveness. Those moments matter. But fragmentation is usually maintained through tiny repetitions, and wholeness is usually rebuilt there too. A day turns in micromoments. The tone you choose in the first hard email. Whether you punish someone with delayed response. Whether you let envy become a worldview. Whether you turn your mistake into defensiveness. Whether you listen for what is true or only for what protects you. Whether you let fatigue excuse carelessness. Whether you speak to yourself as an enemy when you fail. Most people do not ruin their integrity in one spectacular collapse. They erode it through hundreds of small permissions. Likewise, most people do not become whole through one transcendent insight. They become more whole through repeated acts of return inside ordinary life. This should be encouraging. It means the path is available on a Tuesday afternoon. Not only in sacred conditions. Not only when you are well rested and inspired. Catching yourself earlier. One sign of real growth is not that you stop becoming fragmented. It is that you catch fragmentation sooner. At first, people often notice only after the fact. They look back on the conversation, the day, the week, and realize they were living from resentment, fear, or vanity. That is still useful. Retrospective honesty is better than none. Later, the recognition moves closer to the event. You notice during the conversation that your tone has shifted. You notice, while typing, that the email is no longer trying to clarify anything. You notice, while rehearsing a grievance internally, that your mind is feeding on repetition rather than seeking truth. Over time, recognition can become almost simultaneous with contraction. The body tightens and you know. The ego reaches for superiority and you know. The mind starts crafting a flattering story and you know. This does not make you perfect. It makes return less expensive. The earlier you catch the drift, the less collateral damage it creates. There is a quiet mercy in this. Much suffering persists because people do not interrupt themselves until after the pattern has already injured the field. Faster return is one of the most practical forms of maturity. Returning without self-hatred. There is a trap here. Once people become more ethically or spiritually serious, they often become harsher with themselves when they fail. They turn the discipline of return into another arena for self-attack. I should be beyond this. I can't believe I reacted that way. If I were really growing, I wouldn't still feel this. I've failed again. This response is understandable, but it usually deepens fragmentation. Why? Because self-hatred is just another smaller lens. It narrows the field around injury, identity, and moral drama. It does not produce cleaner action. It often produces collapse, concealment, or theatrical repentance. Universal love, if it is real, has to include the one who is returning. That does not mean indulgence. It means refusing to use shame as your organizing principle. A more honest stance sounds like, I drifted. I can see the drift. I am responsible for what came from it. Now I return. That stance keeps accountability intact without making self-condemnation into a false proof of sincerity. People often think they are being morally serious when they are actually just being punishing. Punishment may feel intense, but intensity is not the same as transformation. Practical rituals that help the return. Return is a discipline, and disciplines benefit from form. The exact rituals matter less than their honesty, but most people need some repeatable structure. Here are some I find useful. 1. The lens question. Several times a day, ask yourself, what lens am I using right now? This question is powerful because it bypasses grand self-narratives. It does not ask whether you are a good person. It asks what is actually governing perception in this moment. 2. The three-part inclusion. When reactive, deliberately widen the frame. What is true for me? What is true for the other? What is true for the whole situation? Fragmentation often comes from absolutizing only one of these. Return restores the larger field. 3. Delayed expression. When the impulse to discharge is strong, create a small pause. Not endless avoidance, just enough delay to stop the smaller lens from speaking first. A breath. A walk. A draft saved unsent. A glass of water. A night's sleep when the matter can wait. 4. The 30-second reset. Run a quick mindful meta. Drop the contraction. Re-radiate. This is the workhorse practice of all-day meta. It takes 30 seconds. It can be done in line at the post office. Use it constantly. 5. Clean repair. If you acted from fragmentation, repair quickly. Apologize precisely. Clarify without over-explaining. Name what happened without making the apology into another performance. Repair is one of the most concrete forms of return. 6. Daily review. At the end of the day, ask, where did I stay within the lens of love? Where did I fragment? What would return have looked like one step earlier? This is not for moral bookkeeping. It is for pattern recognition. A life becomes more coherent when examined with honesty and without spectacle. 7. Recommitment without drama. After noticing drift, simply begin again. No grand oath. No theatrical self-reinvention. No need to announce that you are entering a new era of wholeness. Quiet recommitment is often stronger than emotionally dramatic declarations. Why return is a form of strength. A culture trained on performance often misunderstands return. It assumes that coming back means you were weak to begin with. Really, return is one of the clearest forms of strength. It takes strength to interrupt momentum. It takes strength to stop harvesting emotional payoff from resentment. It takes strength to apologize when the ego wants elegance. It takes strength to re-enter care after disappointment. It takes strength to choose coherence over theatrics. The weaker move is often to keep going. Keep escalating. Keep rehearsing your grievance. Keep preserving image. Keep letting the smaller lens narrate the world. That requires no discipline at all. Only inertia. Return breaks inertia. It reasserts authorship. Not the inflated authorship of total control, but the grounded authorship of choosing again. That choice is available far more often than people think. The hope inside the discipline. The word discipline can sound hard, even punitive. But the deepest reason for discipline here is hopeful, not harsh. Return matters because fragmentation is not final. No single reactive hour has to define the day. No defensive conversation has to define the relationship. No period of ambition, envy, fear, or numbness has to become your permanent architecture. You can come back. That is the hope. Not that you will become incapable of leaving love behind, but that leaving it behind no longer has to mean living without it. This is one reason universal love is more demanding than sentiment and more merciful than perfectionism. It calls you upward while still leaving a path home.